Sitting in the garage, always fun to talk with this guy. Ladies and gentlemen, Lee Diffie on the phone. Hi, Lee. How are you?
Hey, Jim. Great to be back on the show.
Always fun. And there's so much going on. And I was loving your commentary over the weekend, first and foremost, about the Roval. You were just so excited about it as I was. There was curiosity. And then when you actually saw the finished product, how did you feel about it?
Well, look, I want to backtrack and just say that over the years, I've commentated, whether it be two wheels or four, commentated on many races on many different Rovals. You know, obviously Daytona International Speedway is a huge Roval. And then you've got Homestead. We've done sports car races at Phoenix on a Roval, at Iowa, if you can believe that, at Iowa Speedway. There was
really?
A Grand Am race years ago. You know, the list goes on. Texas Motor Speedway, I remember an American Le Mans Series race there many years ago. So I've done lots of, and Fontana for Superbikes. So I've done lots, I've covered lots of Roval racing. But I have to say I was very skeptical about this. And last year I was having a discussion with Jeff Burton after he had driven the proposed course. And it was last year when we were at Homestead Miami Speedway for the finale. And, you know, he's like, man, you know, don't knock it. He said, I've driven it. He said, it's pretty good. And I was like, I'm not sure. I'm not convinced. So I'll happily eat my words because I thought it raced really well. And it was, you know, it was just that, for me, it was that X factor. It was an extra X factor of the playoffs. And I, you know, as I mentioned in my commentary on social media, I've been arguing and pushing for years, just saying, yes, of course, you've got to have a road course, or in this case, a Roval, in the playoffs, because therefore you're making the champion more complete, you know. And as we know now, the road course ringers don't exist in cup racing anymore because all of the drivers are so good at road course racing. But, you know, throw in a new track and something that had some pretty, not treacherous, but certainly car-eating corners, and as we saw.
Oh, yeah, ask Brad Keselowski. Yeah, the brakes are... Yeah. It's the old line. What's the old, you know, I remember, what was it, Days of Thunder? You're driving a car that weighs twice as much and has half the brakes. Yeah, I mean, it really, and there were moments during that where you're watching them going, there's no way they're going to make this turn. And they didn't.
Yep. And then the way it finished, you know, with Jimmy Johnson challenging Martin Truex and Martin's words post-race were, you know, I saw him come and there was no way he was going to make the corner whether I was there or not. And it was just a thriller. I'm really pleased. I'm pleased for the series. It was great for us on NBC Sports, great for it was positive all around, I thought.
Get back to Jimmy Johnson. There were some people on social media saying, "Yeah, you're done, you're washed up, you shouldn't have done that." I saw the look, and I'm sure you did too, after the race when he's standing there waiting to find out whether or not he made it or not, and the glare and the look in his eyes. That was not a guy who's ready to hang it up. That's a guy who was pissed off, pardon my French, by the season that they had because he's better than that. And is nowhere near being done. He's not going to walk away like this. There's no way Jimmy Johnson is going to go, I won seven, I'm good.
100%. He is. There's no way. There's no way that he's ready to do that. And you got to remember what a terrific road course racer Jimmy is. And look back to the years, you know, stepping away from Cup for a moment. Look at the years that he did the Rolex 24 at Daytona. And within a handful of laps, he was at a very similar lap time to his sports car racing specialist co-drivers and teammates. And so you knew that when Keselowski and the others went into the wall and Jimmy was able to skip through to second, and you knew it was going to be on at the end. And it was great. It was nice to be a spectator for once and a viewer, and I really enjoyed it. And I had my sister over from Australia. My sister, my wife, and my two sons and myself were up out of our chairs screaming at the television at that finish. And, you know, that's what you want. That's what you want as a fan, as a viewer, and that's really good for the sport.
I was thinking about something, and maybe I'm reaching here, but when I was watching the F1 race in Sochi and Valtteri Bottas and you know, Valtteri Bottas, excuse me, and the team orders thing, but after the race, the look on his face and the look on Jimmy Johnson's face is what I want to see in a race car driver. They're not happy. I mean, he wasn't. He knew what he had to do. Bottas knew he had to do that. It was team orders. It's part of the sport, unfortunately. But he wasn't happy about it. Jimmy Johnson knew that he had made a mistake. He could have backed off. But he's a race car driver, and he wasn't happy about it. That's what I want if I got somebody behind the wheel for me.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's all you want from anyone. You just want them to care, right? You want them to have passion, and you want them to care. I can remember last year when I had the opportunity to call those two cup races at Watkins Glen and Michigan. And in the at the Michigan weekend after qualifying, Jimmy was so annoyed with their effort and just the whole weekend. He got on his bicycle and rode 100 miles just to blow off some steam, you know, on race night. Just that's the kind of guy he is. That's how much he cares. That's how driven and passionate he is. So I just hope, because we've seen so many amazing things over the last few years. I mean, even if you want to go back to Michael Schumacher winning his seventh Formula One world title, but now Lewis Hamilton on the verge of five, we were able to see Vettel win three, Lewis win three, Vettel win four, Lewis win four. We're watching them surpass and create their own historical numbers as far as race victories and pole positions. Now in IndyCar, Scott Dixon becomes only the second five-time champion, you know, and the only other one in more than a 50-year span. You know, AJ Foyt did it in 67. We're seeing Jimmy Johnson get up there to seven cup championships. We're living through a really special era in motorsport, and I just think it's cool if we can be around to see Jimmy win eight. That would be something very cool, very special.
I'm with you 100%. And it's interesting how people complain about maybe the big three in NASCAR, and I'm going, well, if you go back to the 70s, there was a period between Pearson, Yarborough, and Petty where everybody else was laps down, and nobody. And we look back on that through the rose-colored glasses. I'd rather have three or four cars that are that competitive, and then people can come up and get them. Like you see in the Penske cars work themselves into this as well. But it's always been part of NASCAR, one level or another, that there were certain teams that are just better than others.
Sure. Absolutely. It's that way in whatever you want to look at, whether you're talking Cup, whether you're talking sports cars, whether you're talking Indy cars, supercars in Australia, whether you're talking rally, MotoGP, it is the way it is. For sure.
Yeah, but I would go back to the IndyCar. To me, is the one that, and I remember at the beginning of the season, and you had talked about that. I'm hard pressed to find a series that front to back, there's so much talent and they're so close competitively. I mean, when you watch these guys race, whether it's an oval or road course, everyone is competitive.
The series, I was about to say the Verizon IndyCar series, but as of when the clock ticks over to 2019, it will no longer be known as that. But the IndyCar series is on a massive upswing at the moment. It's super exciting to be involved with. And then, you know, just being a little selfish for a moment for us, for our team at NBC Sports, you know, to have it exclusively for the next 3 years and for us to call the Indianapolis 500 next year, there's a lot of excitement around the company and our relationship with the IndyCar series. And the reason why is because when you turn up at the track, I mean, if say when you look at Formula One, you pretty much know that it's either going to be a Ferrari. If you spread it out, it's going to be a Ferrari, a Mercedes, or a Red Bull that's going to win.
Every week.
Every week, or typically it's going to be a Mercedes or a Ferrari. But in IndyCar racing, you don't know. And so this year we had eight different winners. The series had eight different winners. The record is 11, which was tied just a few years ago. But, you know, we turn up. So that's almost, you know, one in every other race, there's a different winner. You know, 17 races, so almost a 50% different winner percentage. And that is really, that gets you going, you know. And I have the pleasure of working alongside Townsend Bell and Paul Tracy. And, you know, Paul's a pretty hard marker. You know, he has the philosophy and the attitude and carries himself kind of the way that he drove. You know, he expects a lot, but he performs hard and he expects a lot of other people. And he, of all, is so thrilled with the series right now. I mean, he came away from the Mid-Ohio race and he rang me on the Tuesday or the Wednesday afterwards and he'd had a chance to watch it back. And he just said, Diff, he said, those opening 10 laps, that was no joke.
Yeah.
He said, to me, that takes me back to like the 90s kart, you know. He said, that was no joke. Those guys were going for big moves. They weren't messing around. And for Paul Tracy to say that's no joke, that's big time. And I think that's why, you know, the cars look cool again. They're at 750 horsepower now. With the new engine coming in a couple of years' time, they're going to go back to 950. and it's, you know, going to cool places. Heading back to Portland this year was massive. Heading to Circuit of the Americas next year is going to be fabulous. So, yeah, there's a lot to cheer about and a lot to be excited about with IndyCar racing right now.
Is there a drop-dead date for Alonso if he's going to make the move? Realistically, is there a drop dead date?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, what I don't like is that it's all gone very quiet. And there was quite a bit of hubbub, and there was quite a good vibe going around there for a while. Now it's gone all quiet, and obviously Honda has said that they don't want any part of it if he's involved, and so that's obviously put a pretty major stumbling block in the road. But I'm not sure. I wish I had an answer for you, Jim. And I'd love to see him in the series. You know, at one stage there, we were all getting ourselves artificially excited by thinking that maybe we might end up with Alonso and Raikkonen in the IndyCar series next year. We now know that Kimi's definitely not going to be there. And I don't know, maybe I kind of get the feeling at the moment, and I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong. I kind of get the feeling now that maybe the best result we could hope for is Fernando at the 500.
Just do a one-off race like that. And then I heard Tony Stewart saying not this year, but the following one. So 2020, he seems like he's lining that up. He wants to get a year because he doesn't want to go out there and just turn laps. If he's going to run the 500, he wants to win it.
That would be awesome. I'd bring it on. Bring it on. I mean, throwing Tony into the field, at the quality of that the field is now, he would only enhance it, which is awesome. And I think he deserves that for the amazing career that he's had. Have one last shot at it. Why not? It was great to have Danica in it this year and Fernando last year. So, yeah, I'm a fan of these one-offs, if you want to call it like that. But hopefully Fernando won't just be a one-off. And, you know, talking about those historical milestones, wouldn't it be something if we got to see him win the Triple Crown, his Triple Crown?
Oh, exactly. Absolutely. Lee Diffie with us here. And I always appreciate the time, Lee. Thanks so much for doing this.
No worries. Great. Great to be on the show.
Robert Wickens, we saw some of the Instagram videos with him doing some. He was pedaling a couple miles. I mean, his drive, his motivation. But I know that even when you were at the Born Racing, the Scott Dixon movie, he's in everybody's thoughts and prayers. But he's got to know that an entire sport is behind him.
Oh, very much so. Very much so. And you know, IndyCar as a series is a globally significant series. But when you boil it down, it's a really tiny family, because it really is. Everybody knows each other very well. Everybody races each other hard, but they care about each other terribly. And I mean, that when stuff like that happens, it. And let me tell you, just, you know, for us being on air for nearly a 2-hour fill, talking about that and watching the replay again and again, and then it jolts you. It really jolts you. But then on the positive side is, you know, when we were, Jim, we were probably within, I think, half an hour away from coming on the air in Sonoma, and Robert posted that Twitter and Instagram video, the first one that we'd seen of him sitting up in bed, which just lifted everybody's spirits right before the season finale, which was fantastic. And then for him to do the subsequent video where he was on the rehab machine and doing some pedaling is just...
I love that.
We all love it. We all love it, and just can't wish him a speedy enough recovery. And, his drive right now is equivalent to how he drives a race car, which is, you know, for the win, with passion. You know, he's a world-class racer. And and I speak on behalf of a lot of different people to say that hopefully one day we will see him race a car again.
Oh, I have no doubt. One way or another, in some series or another, there's no way. You're never going to keep this guy off a track. It's just who he is.
Yeah. He's an amazing human being, and he's been a wonderful, you know, just when you think the series is at a level that everybody's happy with, along comes Robert Wickens and takes it to a new level. And and he instantly got the respect of the entire field. You know, putting it on pole position at your first race, arguably should have won that first race in St. Petersburg, all bar the confrontation with Rossi. And then everything that he did, you know, the streak of podiums that he had, and he was knocking on the, I think he was sixth in the championship, was as high as he got, knocking on the top five in your first year. And I want to steal one of Townsend's lines here. He just said the way that Wickens adapted to oval racing, you know, because he came from obviously the Atlantic series and back in the day, and then before he went to Europe, and did all of his racing on road courses. But for him to come into an Indy car and then get on an oval and perform the way that he did,
amazing.
You know, yeah, I mean, people talk about him in the same vein as the way that Nigel Mansell took to ovals, you know, in his rookie season. So, yeah, can't wait for the day that we see Wiki in a car again.
I'm looking at the coffee mug for your buddy David Hobbs, the Hobbo coffee mug on racingmugs.com. That's my favorite one. I love the one of you guys with Will and everybody else, man. But this one, this is so cool. I got to get one. It's 1995. Why wouldn't you get one if you're a racing fan? I mean, it's David Hobbs, for God's sakes.
This is the year of Hobbo. Even though he's not on TV, this is the year of Hobbo. He came out with his book. He's been all around the world doing book signings, and it's gone very, very well. And then now he's got his own coffee mug on Racing Mugs. And, yeah, I mean, I had a look at that the other day as well, and I think it's probably as colourful as the character that he is, you know. And he's a little frustrated. He'd love to still be calling races and be on TV, but at the same time he's had a wonderful year meeting people all over the place. His book that was written by Andrew Marriott, renowned British journalist and television commentator, did a really nice job. The pictorial passages through it are terrific, just to get a window into Hobbo's amazingly diverse life. And now you can have him in your kitchen every morning. So,
love it.
Yeah.
I love it. That's going to go up there, man. All right. So, Lee, what's next for you? I mean, what's next as you work for the fine folks at NBC?
So the majority of the motor racing component has finished for me for the year, but work hasn't finished. I'm in the middle of my rugby portion of the year. So we have an English domestic series called Gallagher Premiership Rugby. So Gallagher, the insurance company that sponsors Max Chilton, so they also sponsor the domestic rugby series in the UK. So very similar to how NBC Sports does English Premier League soccer, we do a very similar way with how we cover rugby. And this is all part of the big rugby portfolio on NBC, how we lead up to the Rugby World Cup next year. But I will be in Miami, Homestead Miami Speedway, for the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series finale, where I'm pretty sure, I don't know definitely yet, but I'm pretty sure it'll be Dale Jarrett and I doing the Hot Pass, which will be our fourth year in a row doing that, which is the alternative perspective of the championship finale, which, you know, the main coverage of the race will be on NBC. But then on NBCSN, we have Hot Pass, which is where we have the four screens, which is the in-car of the Championship Four, and we listen to the crew chief to driver, driver to spotter to driver radio, and then DJ and I do a little bit of intermittent commentary. And it's just a kind of a value add, if you want. You know, you can channel surf, you can watch the main race on NBC, and then if you want to take a break from that and have a look at something different, you can come over to us on NBCSN and vice versa.
Nice, I like that. And I'm sticking by my pick. People think I'm nuts, but I think Kyle Larson has something going. And the way he got into the next round, and that kind of, those are those little moments that suddenly you're like, all right, someone's looking out for him. He's too fast, and if he can get his way to Homestead and be one of those final four, he'll win.
That was just crazy. And on the top left of the screen, you know, where the coverage had the graphic where, you know, the cutoff to 12th, you know, to make it through to the second round. And the numbers are changing by the second. I was like, wow, this is like kind of almost like Q3 and F1 qualifying. It was fantastic.
I mean, I'm
with you. I'm a big, I don't know if we're allowed to say we're a fan. I mean this in the most unbiased way, but I've been a fan of his for a long time. I love the way he drives. So hopefully he can have a good run. I know that the eventual race winner, Ryan Blaney, said that he didn't, you know, he never likes to win races like that, but guess what? He was in the right place at the right time.
It's not his fault. Exactly. Wasn't Ryan's fault that they decided to go do that? So, Leah, talk all day. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so I think he could be, you know, who knows how far he can go with his first year at Penske, which will be fantastic. See if he can make it to the Championship Four. I think it's going to be interesting, given the way that the regular season went, and the regular season was dominated by Harvick, Kyle Busch, and Truex. You know, will the three of those guys be there at the end? You know, wouldn't that be a surprise if they weren't? You know, so yeah, lots still to play for.
Could you imagine Joe Gibbs and Roger Penske giving team orders like Mode 21 and all that stuff? I can't ever imagine that. I can't imagine that.
No, just gloves off, go race.
That's what they got to do. I don't know. Is there any? Are we? Is the cat out of the bag in F1? It's just too far gone with team orders. You can't bring it back.
I think so. I think so. Frustratingly, I mean, that on Sunday was, you know, that harkens back to the Massa Alonso days. It harkens back to the Schumacher Barrichello days.
Oh, Weber.
Harkens back to Weber Vettel. It harkens back to Häkkinen Coulthard. You know, the list goes on. And I, you know, our dear friend Steve Matchett, you know, he put an interesting message on Twitter the other day. He said, you know, for something that we you know, the question will go on forever: is it a sport or is it a business? And unfortunately, I think this is another example of the latter.
It is. There's, and I don't know how they'll control it, but that's another conversation. Well, let's stay in touch. We get closer to Homestead. And again, racingmugs.com. Get the Habbo, man. And also, I love the one, the four of you guys, too. That's fantastic, man.
Yeah, I've got one of those. I have to get myself a Habbo one as well. So, yeah, it's good. Just a bit of fun, bit of cartoons. But I do love that Habbo one.
All right, Lee Diffie, we'll talk soon. And that means you'll be up here for the, you'll be working the duels in Detroit next year, obviously, right?
For sure.
Nice.
The week after Indy, yeah, we'll be there in your hometown.
All right, good deal. We'll go out and get a couple of conies, and we'll talk shop.
Thanks, Jim.
All right, thanks, Lee.